This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Good evening, I'm David Gale and welcome to The Informer. Tonight I'm joined by Paul McClure. On tonight's Informer, we will be chatting with Karen Bryant, CEO of Midsummer, followed by Fiona Patton from the Australia Sex Party about euthanasia, and we'll be finishing up by chatting with Anthony Wallace from Equal Love. In a statement released by Midsummer Festival, it has informed the LGBTQIA communities that after robust consultation, Midsummer will continue their current media partnership with the Herald Sun and Leader Publications for the remaining 2017 festival period. Chief Executive Karen Bryant, members of the Midsummer Board and staff from the Midsummer team have undertaken a range of community consultation processes since the sponsorship came under recent scrutiny. It's been a complex process, taking into consideration a broad range of factors regarding the partnership that has been in place since 2015. Tonight on The Informer, we are joined by Midsummer Chief Executive Karen Bryant. Welcome, Karen.
Hi.
Good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Look, for those that may not be aware, can you tell us about the Herald Sun controversy? It's been on most people's minds. It's been on in a lot of press, but what can you tell us about it?
Sure. The controversy has really been very much in people's minds over the last couple of weeks. I moved over to Melbourne and the festival at the end of July, so haven't really been with the festival for a long time. And the sponsorship, as you pointed out, was already in place. It had been in place about 18 months before I came on board. Alongside a range of partnerships that we have. And the reality is initially my focus was on making sure the festival could be delivered, because when I came on board there was really no staff and we really had to focus on that, because there's no point marketing and sponsoring something if you don't have a festival.
True, not very much time to put on the festival.
That's
from
right.
Your point of view,
yeah.
Of course.
So that has been my primary focus, is to make sure we're here for the community, we're here for a range of event producers and artists. So that really has been my focus. Since this was raised with me initially, we did start some consultation around the partnership, and particularly the partnership was put in place very much around accessing, and it is a media partnership, it's in kind, it's not cash, it's about advertising, and it's quite a considerable amount of advertising that we could just not hope to be able to leverage in the mainstream media otherwise.
So what is the reason for the criticism of this partnership?
Look, obviously there's really, look, we know it, and interestingly our consultation did show that there, and it was a divisive issue, you know,
sure.
There's people split on each side and reasonably evenly split. But there was an increased support on the side of us maintaining this partnership. We deliberately didn't go out and respond and make a snap decision. We still only took a couple of weeks, but we needed to take that time to talk to our members, to talk to all of those people who engaged in Midsummer. But the reality is that we do have an obligation not only to our audiences or our community as audiences, but also to our artists who are engaging with a greater audience base. And also for those people, you know, a lot of the conversation's been around safe spaces, and we don't step away or in any way try and negate the concerns that we know are out there. You know, we've clearly heard that there's concerns around editorial opinions, around articles produced by News Corp that have been offensive.
Yeah, certainly
that.
Articles that have been talking about the Safe Schools program.
Absolutely.
In a very negative light.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, you've been slammed on the internet and in other GLBTIQ media, certainly publications and online. Tell us, with the Herald Sun, so do they give you $20,000 cash? Did they give you $100,000 cash? Did they give you, what do they give us to support this Midsummer Carnival?
We get $50,000 worth of advertising, which is pretty significant in terms of, given that our advertising budget's actually zero.
Yeah.
Really, it is about making sure and leveraging that partnership to try and get some really positive outcomes for the community, for the artists and events. We're open access. We don't produce the majority of the events in our program. We do produce a number of events that are all actually free, and obviously we promote those. But really, it is also about promoting the events of members of our community and also making sure that for those people, there's been a lot of talk around, how these publications and have represented negatively for particularly young people coming out, and there's no way that we're denying that, and we are having some robust conversations with our partner in that space. But on the other side, the philosophy around this partnership was very much around making sure that there was that space could be activated, so that there's positive messages, so that the young person who picks up their parents' paper sees positive messages around the festival and around their community.
And visibility.
Yeah. And look, I'll give you a personal thing, is I've always believed that you change hearts and minds by engaging in education. You don't do so by alienation and conflict. I know some people have said that's a naive statement, and I certainly have been moved by the sentiment and the anger and the concern in the community. I'm not untouched by that. I'm someone who likes to be accessible. But on the other side, we've had LGBTIQ staff from within the Herald Sun reach out to us and say, and that's been probably the most moving thing that's happened over the last 2 weeks, of those people reaching out to us and saying, look, and some of whom have spoken out on social media, other haven't felt like doing that and have just contacted us and have said, look, we are a member of the community. We work for this organisation. A, things are not as black and white as you might think, but also we want this partnership to bring about change. We want to work with you. Please stick with us.
Look, I would say that I'm in the camp that, if somebody is struggling with their sexuality, and it doesn't matter whether they're young or old or whatever, and they actually came across something in the Herald Sun that mentioned, about the carnival being on, or, there was some column inches given to, a positive story, I suppose, in that sort of sense, I sort of believe that, that's probably worth it. Although at the same time, on the other side, if they're putting out bad stories that don't necessarily portray us in a particularly good light, or they slam something like Safe Schools or something like that, that's not good as well, because that would also have the detriment effect. But those column inches that are given, has anybody else offered to support you as a media partner, like
nowhere
the Fairfax
near
industry
that.
Or, channels, television stations and things like that?
Yeah, we do have other partners, but nowhere near in terms of the broader print media. And as I said, the partnership was in place. It's about maximising those. But that's not to say that we haven't had some really honest conversations over the last 2 weeks with Herald Sun staff. Where we've really made it clear that this is a problem for us, it's a problem for the community, and we need to see how, what impact this relationship has over the next couple of months. Because this partnership runs out in a couple of months.
Yeah.
It's not when we talk about the next year. The festival's on in January, February. The partnership was in place. We want to maximise this. We want to make sure that we can do the very best we can, because we're here for the community and artists and event managers. And then we will be re-looking at that, and we've made that very clear.
Yeah, sure. Look, I mean, there are a lot of free events, and they come at a cost, of course. We're looking forward, of course, to the Carnival and also to the Pride March, and also Horizon, which is a new event.
It is.
Which is to close the whole Midsummer Carnival. I go to a lot of things in Midsummer, because it is an arts-based festival as well, and your background is in that.
It is.
What are the sorts of things that you're looking forward to in this year's...
And look, that's, I guess, been the disappointing thing, is that this has sort of hijacked the energy and enthusiasm around our launch only a few weeks ago, which we came out of feeling so good. I was brought on board, the festival literally had one staff member who was leaving. It was, so I came on board and that was it. We had some volunteers, but we've had to rebuild a brand new team with an incredible energy and enthusiasm. And what we're trying to do is rebuild this organisation and strengthen it, so that this can be an organisation that people are proud of and that leads, and over the next few years develops an increased diversity. So we've been reaching out to the Indigenous communities, we've been to people of colour, to the disability cultures, to the trans community, and making sure that not only is this festival seen for 3 weeks a year, because I think that's how we're seen, is we do 3 years and we pop up and we do 3 weeks
and then
we
you go on again. Yeah.
We actually want to invest in being, part of what develops the footprint of this community creatively 12 months of the year. And we'd already made those commitments and started these projects and started to layer, things through this festival, particularly with Indigenous community and disability communities and cultures. And we've started raising money for new programs that are actually about investment in particularly young artists. So the hard thing has been we have no problem with people raising concerns. I'm someone that says pick up the phone and have a conversation.
Sure.
As long as you're respectful, we have had some really abusive and hateful messages.
See, at the same time, people forget the message that this isn't an all-inclusive festival.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just nitty-gritty, what are you looking forward to?
In this festival, I'm really looking forward to, we're going to do a whole lot of artist talks in our festival bar.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to seeing Carnival and I, you know, the love that this community has for it and Pride March, but I'm also really looking forward to seeing a lot of the underground stuff. So Horizon, you mentioned earlier, which is, we've really boosted that up as a signature event, but it's the best sort of cutting edge cross art form artists in Victoria and beyond, online and live. And so I'm really excited about that. Hares and Hyenas program, the Investment Arts Centre Melbourne's put in. So for me,
down at the Gasworks, of course, because there's a number of hubs, of course, around Melbourne. So
I'm looking, I'm a believer that in festivals you immerse yourself.
You know, of course. It's only on for three. Well, at the moment, it's only on for 3 weeks of the year.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
So I kind of want to go, look, if you crawl into work every day or whatever, a little bit tired, that doesn't matter. Go out and completely enjoy yourself. And I hope people, regardless of whatever side, and we know that there are some people who are not going to be happy with the fact that we are seeing this relationship through in its current state. But the other side is, we're an open access festival representing this huge numbers of members of the community from young to old. And I hope people kind of go, you know what, let's stick with this festival and these people for the next few months. Have the debates. We're really happy to open the space for these conversations. We're not saying go away and don't talk about them.
No.
Let's actually have those debates and let's stand together as a community and actually have a stronger platform for the next 12 months.
Looking forward to it all. And thank you very much to Karen Bryant from Midsummer.
Thank you.
A controversial bill to legalise euthanasia will be introduced into Victorian Parliament in the second half of 2017 after a cross-parliamentary committee in June called for limited euthanasia to be introduced in Victoria. If it is introduced, Victoria will be the only state in Australia that has legalised euthanasia. Australian Sex Party leader Fiona Patten initiated the inquiry into end-of-life choices and has welcomed this decision. Tonight, The Informer talks with Fiona about what the new legislation might look like and what it will mean for Victorians. Welcome back to The Informer, Fiona.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Good to hear your voice, Fiona. Look, we've talked before about the euthanasia debate and also that the Parliamentary Committee was going to be reporting back, which of course they did last week. So what actually happened last week for those that aren't aware?
Well, what was quite extraordinary is that the inquiry, the committee brought down its report 6 months ago and the government has 6 months to respond to that inquiry, which they did last week. And I didn't have any great... I wasn't holding out any great hope for them to do anything radical, but much to my delight, they did.
Yeah, they responded straight away. It was like straight away, we're going to move forward on this. It was surprising in itself.
They had to... I mean, they had to respond last week, so they did. But for them to respond and say, we are going to... adopt all of the recommendations of that report and we are going to introduce legislation to allow for physician-assisted dying in Victoria. Now, this is, as you mentioned, this is the first state to do that. In fact, around the world, most governments have been forced by court decisions or, in America, by citizens-initiated referendums. So this is the first time a government and first time a premier has got up and said, no, we're going to listen to the majority of Victorians who want physician-assisted dying to be legal and want it to be regulated. And so the government announced their intention that in 6 months' time, they will introduce legislation to enable... people at the end of their lives to speak to two doctors and get a prescription to make the decision about when they end their death, not have to die in intolerable pain and suffering.
I think it's interesting that that Daniel Andrews sort of flipped, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but due to his own personal experiences...
I know, and I got an email today where someone was saying, oh, that's just terribly selfish of him, that it took a personal experience for him to change his mind. And I remember, like, the first thing, when I found out I had been elected in December 2014, and journalists were asking me what I was doing, and I said, the first thing I'm going to do is get physician-assisted dying on the table.
Yeah.
And the first thing that Daniel Andrews said, not on my watch. That will not happen. So you're right. He has had a turnaround, and it has been the tragic death of his father.
And that comes through life experience, exactly, as we get older and we do live more and see different things. Yeah. So where does this lead us to next year? What's going to be happening during the year? A bill is going to be introduced or...?
Yeah, so I would imagine around June we will see the legislation that the government will put out. It will be, obviously, it will be a conscience vote, so it will be up to every individual member of parliament to make a decision on this bill.
Yeah, because we have actually seen that the Leader of the Opposition has also said that it would be a conscience vote from the Liberal Party as well.
Of course, of course, and so it should be. And so it should be. And what's always been sort of the common protocol that when it's, I guess, life and death decisions, that they allow conscience vote. And we saw that back in 2008 with the abortion legislation, that was a conscience vote. So we'll see legislation in June. In the lead up to that, and we've already, I got my first letter from Daniel Flynn from the Australian Christian Lobby today. Yeah. We will see a very well-funded and very concerted campaign from the Christian right and from the Catholic Church to stop this legislation and to stop MPs, I think, reflecting in their vote, reflecting the will of their constituents. So we'll see that campaign, but I think we're at a tipping point, and we will see very good legislation that will enable some Victorians who are at the end of their life, who are in intolerable suffering, to access physician-assisted dying.
Well, of course, you know, I mean, there will be a scare campaign. We're not, you know, it's quite ironic, you know, in the whole plebiscite thing that, you know, there would have been a scare campaign which has been voted down, so that there is no plebiscite, and a similar sort of thing will come out of this. But you know, look, if I played devil's advocate and, you know, Granny's been really kind to me and she loves me very much and I've always been very close to her and she's getting pretty close to dying and I'm thinking, you know what, I could do with that cashola. I mean, what sort of safeguards are there going to be? Is this legislation modelled on other legislation from around the world?
Yes, I mean this legislation, and for me it's a little bit bittersweet. I mean, this legislation will be very conservative in that it will only help people with a terminal illness, intolerable suffering, where two independent doctors have said this person is of sound mind. They have made an independent decision, and I respect their right to make that decision. So for you, it will be very difficult for you to influence in this hypothetical. It will be very
difficult to lean on Granny.
To lean on Granny, that's right. We currently, you possibly could. I mean, currently we know physician-assisted dying happens regularly and often, and it's generally done in very compassionate grounds, but There is room for nefarious activity to happen amongst greedy relatives. But now, under the legislation, that will be far more difficult. It will be a much more transparent circumstances. The patient or the person will have to be of sound mind, will have to be within months of dying. And they will have to have two doctors
to independently assess them.
Independently assess them. So I think this sets up, and there will be a whole body, an end of life choices kind of a body that will also monitor any decisions and any physician assisted dying approvals that are made. So there will be another body that will be monitoring that. And I think we're actually setting up a system for better safeguards than what we have currently.
Look, it's going to be an interesting debate. You know, people will have opinions on both sides, so it's interesting. I don't know. How do you think the numbers are going to go? We don't know at the moment.
We don't know.
There have been indications from ministers, which is quite rare for ministers as well as the Premier to actually state their case and their pro euthanasia bill legislation and whatever. So, and then, of course, the upper house is another kettle of fish. So what do you think is going to happen there?
Look, I would hope that that the members of Parliament will be representative of the community, and I largely do think they are. So 80% of the community want physician-assisted dying legislation, so I would hope that that's reflected in the vote. But we're going to see an almighty campaign from the right to lifers, from the Christian right, and from the Catholic Church to stop that. So, and they will pull out all stops, and they will spend millions of dollars. So it's going to be a difficult campaign. I hope that compassion and empathy will win out, and that we will allow people at the end of their lives the right to die with dignity. And this isn't about ending life. This is about ending death. And this is about providing people relief from suffering.
Fiona,
I'm quietly confident.
It's always good to have you on The Informer. It's great that you've been able to support us during the year. I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Hopefully we'll have opportunity to talk further come around about June, July or before next year. Thank you.
Wonderful. Happy, happy, joy, joy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Equal Love is a national campaign initiated by the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby in an attempt to win marriage rights in Australia. The campaign began in 2004 and has the support of Amnesty International and the Greens, amongst others. Tonight, The Informer chats with Anthony Wallace, Equal Love's campaign manager, about what has been achieved in 2016, because it's been a bit of a big year, and what is hoped to be achieved in 2017. Welcome back to The Informer, Anthony.
David, how are you doing, mate?
Good to hear your voice, Anthony. Look, what has been achieved this year from Equal Love's perspective?
Well, for the most part of this year, as we've heard the word plebiscite, when marriage equality has been spoken about in the media and in Parliament, and that was the obstacle that we have overcome this year. The plebiscite is dead and buried, and it's a huge win for the LGBTI community across the country. We didn't have to stand by and watch that horrific campaign that would have been against us take shape. So that, I guess, is a great victory that we got rid of Abbott's plebiscite, and now the only way forward is a free vote, and we hope that what Turnbull's going to enact. I mean, that's the only way forward now.
Look, I'm really actually relieved to not have to use that P word anymore, as expect you are as well. And in the end...
Did you know that word before?
No, I think only people around about 1901, I think, knew the word plebiscite. And, you know, but at the same time, we're not going to hear it anymore. It's interesting because we know that the coalition, if they go for re-election in a couple of years' time, and I know that maybe we might have to wait a couple of years until the next election, but they can't go to another election and say, then bring up the P word once more. So,
no, the P word's gone.
Yeah. What other goals do you think Equal Love kicked as well in the current year that we've just seen?
Well, we've seen growing numbers at our public demonstrations and rallies. So it's really promising that the community is still energised. I mean, I know we're all tiring of it, but it is so promising that the community are still hitting the pavement. They're still engaging online, and this fight for marriage equality in this country is far from over.
A little bit of a force to be reckoned with. So what will that force be doing next year in 2017?
We've got... obviously, the year starts off with our Midsummer Festival. That's a great time for us to connect with the community again throughout the various activities of Pride March and the Carnival Day. We're having postcards printed up for people to write personal messages to the PM on at Carnival, and we'll be driving them up to Canberra directly to hand them to the Prime Minister's office.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were going to give me a lift up to Canberra.
You want to go to Canberra?
Yeah, well, why not? Why not? So you're going to have a big presence in Midsummer, and of course there are plans next year to start to pressure more and more MPs and staff the government of Oxygen, I suppose, and make sure that they start to look at addressing this issue of equal love.
Yeah, it's quite frightening, Dave, when you think about it. If Turnbull didn't topple Abbott, there's a great chance that marriage equality would have been brought on into this parliament because that was what was promised by Abbott, a free vote mm-hmm. in the next parliament, of which we're in. It's horrendous to think that Malcolm Turnbull's effectively the reason that we're still without marriage equality in this country.
Yeah, and as a supporter as well. Look, Anthony, it's been great having you on The Informer this year, and I'd like to thank you for your support. Also, we'll be looking forward to talking to you once again next year, and I hope you have a happy Christmas and a prosperous new year.
Wonderful Christmas to all the Joy family.
Thank you, Anthony. Okay, we'd like to thank the guests, Karen Bryant, from the CEO from Midsummer, and of course Fiona Patton, from leader of the Australian Sex Party, also Anthony Wallace from Equal Love, and also we'll be taking a break, Paul and myself, Tuesday night team of The Informer. The Informer will be back next year around about the 14th, 15th of January. Can't tell you the exact date, but, you know, you can check with Joy. It's been a pleasure actually presenting The Informer this year, and we look forward to the new year as well.
Happy New Year and Merry Christmas to all.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.